Well, it's great to be with you. My name's Brian, and can we make a couple of deals to begin with? First, can I have permission to forget everybody's name 10 times? I'd like to, but we'll help each other. Some of you know each other well, but let's just all keep saying our names to each other as, you know, a favor to one another. Secondly, you know how usually you have a lecture and then questions? I'd like to start with questions. That will help me get an idea of where you're coming from, what you'd like to talk about. Is that okay? Can we do that? And so whoever has the first question gets a free lunch. Everybody does. But anyway, yes, how about it? Yes, Linda.
What prevented you from going through with becoming an Anglican priest?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question.
And has that healed since then?
That's great. Well, just that invites me to tell a little bit of my story. I grew up in a fundamentalist background. A little strange denomination that was actually very interested in worship and didn't call themselves a denomination. And no, I'm not talking about the Churches of Christ. There is something called the Plymouth Brethren. I don't know if any of you have heard of it. Garrison Keillor tells great stories about the Plymouth Brethren. And there are lots of weird Plymouth Brethren popping up in different places. But that was my background. And their distinctives are no pastor. And that's changing, but it used to be no pastor. And they celebrated the Eucharist each week, but with no liturgy, or no written liturgy, but a very strict unwritten liturgy. It's kind of an interesting history. A couple of Anglican priests in the 1830s in Ireland and England were disturbed by the division in the church. So they said, at night, we're going to take off our vestments and open and celebrate an open table, which was really unheard of in those days, for anyone who loves Christ, and we'll do it all as equals. So this was kind of this radical thing. There was a very small but significant step from we will accept anyone from any denomination to saying we will accept anyone who leaves any denomination. Do you see the difference? And so they went from this very magnanimous spirit to becoming quite sectarian and within a very short time. But anyhow, that was my background. I was pretty sure I was on my way out of there by the time I was 12 or 13, partly because as a fundamentalist church, I was very interested in science. And I remember very clearly being told by a Sunday school teacher, you either believe in God or evolution. You know, it was a God science thing. And I just thought, well, science is pretty cool. I haven't seen God yet. And these people who were supposed to represent him are kind of mean. So, you know, he sort of helped me on my way out. By the time I was 16, I'd encountered some folks in the Jesus movement, which was kind of happening then. And that was where my real commitment to Christ came. And I am a product of excellent, people talk about discipleship, and we're going to talk a lot about spiritual formation and disciple making. But I just look back and I just think everything that's supposed to happen with that happened with me. I had a succession of older men and then women take me under their wing and really, really disciple me. I was a musician. I still play guitar and I can play piano a little bit, but I used to be able to sing. I can't sing anymore because I had four kids and coached soccer. I blew out my vocal cords. So if you stand next to me, I sound like Bob Dylan with laryngitis. You know, it's really bad. So, but I used to sing and play, and I was invited to play at an Episcopal church near Washington D.C., where I've lived almost all my life. And the rector took me under his wing and really became a mentor to me. And then he really encouraged me to consider the seminary. So I went through the whole process of entering the Episcopal Seminary. Not the whole process. I got to the retreat with a bishop. And on the weekend of the retreat with a bishop, I had this terrible thing. It was the first time I've ever had this and really haven't had anything like this since. But it was this major case of cold feet. And I just felt like this wasn't exactly my calling. I loved this one church, but I realized I had to love the whole thing. And I not only had to think it was cool, I had to think it was right. And I thought it was cool, but it didn't really matter to me about it. The right, wrong part of it didn't work for me. So I realized I wasn't quite committed enough to go through with this, and which was very disappointing because it's nice when you're 23 years old to have your future figured out and suddenly not have it figured out. So ended up not going through with that at the very last minute. And I'd lost half of, not really lost, but worried half of my friends when they told them I was going to become an Episcopal priest, and I lost the others when I said I wasn't. So that was a traumatic thing. But it ended up being wonderful because my Episcopal experience really broadened me in terms of worship. My training was not in theology, it was in literature, which really broadened me in terms of philosophy and reading and art and semiotics and all kinds of things like that. And I never would have guessed it's what I do. So I planned to be a college English teacher, taught for several years. While doing so, my wife and I started a little fellowship group in our house, and it grew into 30, 40, 70, 80 people. We were bringing them to this Episcopal church. We asked them if we could become a sub-congregation. Turns out we were on the wrong side of the river, which meant we were in a different diocese. Our local diocese was completely uninterested in anything like this. So the vestry of the church secretly, I think I can say this now, secretly said to us, look, why don't you just go ahead and do it? You can't wear the T-shirt. That's what they basically said. So we formed a little church, and I was not the pastor, nor was I planning to be the pastor. I just wanted to be an active lay person as a college English teacher. Then we hired a guy to be our pastor who was a wonderful person, turned out the worst preacher God ever made. I actually don't think God made him as a preacher. That's the bottom line. But he had felt that's what he was supposed to do. And we loved him so much, and he was so wonderful. But when he preached, you wanted to become a Buddhist. I mean, that's basically what happened. You just thought something else other than this. And so I started volunteering to preach because it was easier to prepare a sermon than to listen to one of his. I mean, this is the truth. And you just felt, as an act of mercy to other people. And fortunately, he really was very painful for him to do sermons as well. So he, at first I said, look, I'll help you. I'll do one a month. And then it was two a month. And then he actually came to us and said, you know what? I love this church. I want to be part of this church. But my real calling is to be a social worker and work among the poor. And so I don't want to be the pastor anymore. And we inside just said, you know, this just felt right. It really came right. And so then our little leadership team said to me, well, Brian, you're doing a lot of the work anyway. Would you consider becoming the pastor if we matched your salary? Which I was a bottom of the level college English teacher. It was not hard to do. And I should have prayed about this, but I went to my wife. But I hear the voice of the Lord through her quite often. So I said, well, Grace, what do you think? Should we do this? And she said, well, this is the truth. She said, Brian, you're a husband, you're a father, you're a full-time college teacher, and you're doing like 20 hours a week of church work already. So she said, I think you can do any three out of those four. It's your choice. Yeah. Well, that got my attention. So I decided to stop teaching and work with the church. So that was my call to ministry. So I ended up pastoring this non-denominational church for 24 years. Until 18 months ago. And we brought in a new pastor who's doing a fantastic job. I'm now a member of the church. I preach whenever the pastor needs me to, which I did yesterday. And yesterday was a miracle because I finished my sermon 5 minutes early and then left before the service is over and got a plane to get down here for last night. So everything worked out well. I think the congregation would prefer that I always have a plane to catch. This has a way of shortening the sermon. But anyway, and I tell people my ministry now is to be an example of how to treat the pastor. So that's the short story on my life. So, yes?
I'm just interested in your impression of IWS so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your experience, the places you've been, and the concept of IWS, I'd just be interested in hearing what your thoughts are.
Is this being taped? I want to. The reason I jokingly say that is because I don't want to violate Bob Weber's privacy in any way. But you know, Bob has been a friend for several years. I think he was sort of just spying on me for a while because he was aware of my writings. And then I know that some of you know Stanley Grenz, who also passed away just way too soon. And Stan was a friend of mine. And I know that Bob and Stan had sort of talked about me behind my back, not in the way you usually think. Because one day I was talking to Stan, and I just said, Stan, I just want less publicity. I don't like being the poster child for postmodernism. I just feel like I've got a huge target painted on my back. I just want to be a pastor. And you know, and Stan said something like, look, you know, Bob and I have been talking about you. You know, you got to get out there and do this, you know. So they basically were, you know, the guys in the, I was going to say they were the guys in the foxhole saying, you go out there, you know. but that's not true, because Stan had gone out there and taken a lot of heat, and of course Bob had as well. So for years Bob has been telling me about the Institute and has been asking me if I could come, and I just couldn't. He always asked me too late, but I wanted to come. And I, of course, I'm a huge fan of Bob's work. I feel like probably you all feel this too. To some degree, this thing is Bob's friends, people who've become Bob's friends. Of course, that won't be true. 10 years from now, they'll be your friends and the friends of your friends, which is kind of a responsibility you all should feel. But, you know, all having a common friend in Jesus, but also in Bob, I feel completely at home. And you all just seem a little crazy. Yeah.
It's a requirement.
It's a requirement. That's good. Yeah. Yes?
Tell us a little bit about your church. What yes. is it? You said it's non-denominational, but is it liturgical?
Yes.
Is it blended service? Is it convergence?
Yes. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about the question is a little bit about the church. It's called Cedar Ridge Community Church. It's between Baltimore and Washington. And let me tell you about my experience, because I've only been there maybe 8 times in the last 18 months, because I've just been traveling constantly. So, and one of the things of my staying away is making sure that the new pastor is able to really take the thing in a new, you know, to where it needs to be. So I'm always hesitant to say anything about Cedar Ridge, because I want its future to continue to evolve, you know. Because of my years in the Episcopal Church, I grew to love the Episcopal liturgy. Because of my days in a fundamentalist church growing up, I grew to be suspicious of unwritten liturgy. Because unwritten liturgy is harder to change than written liturgy. So does everybody know what I mean by that? When we formed the church, we stole a lot from the prayer book, and we did the Eucharist every Sunday, and took a lot of the prayers. But also we were somewhat in the same boat as Willow Creek, in that I was teaching at a secular university. We're in a pretty secular area. I live in Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C. And one way to say it is almost all the evangelical churches, all the evangelical churches in my area, maybe there's an exception now, but we're sort of affiliated with the religious right. Everybody outside the church is a liberal Democrat, virtually, see. So there's such a gap between the church and where everybody is at. One of my gifts is evangelism. So we tried to take our sort of roots in the Episcopal liturgy and create a congregation that could be very open and welcoming to people who weren't Christians and who were seekers at various legs of the journey. And it meant that we diverged pretty far from what people think of when they think of evangelical in terms of openness. Like I preached there yesterday, and a lady came up to me after the service. In fact, very relevant to our topic today, if we ever get to it. But she gave me a hug. I'd never met her before. She said, I've been coming here for 6 months. So, you know, I think she heard me speak once a month or two ago. She said, the reason we're here is my 16-year-old son said to us 6 months ago, you know, we really ought to go to church. And she said, my husband and I have no religious background. It's the best thing that's ever happened to us, she said, coming to this church. And then she starts to cry. And she says, but you know, I see, here's what she said. I see the beauty of God in Jesus, she said. But I don't get the Trinity, and I don't get the crucifixion, and I don't get the resurrection. But is that okay, she said. And I said, you know, you are excommunicated out of here at this moment. I said, well, look, we're all in a journey. And I said, you see the beauty of God in Jesus. Things are going to work out. You know, you keep following that path. And then she asked me, you know what I need? She said, I need some practices. That's exactly what she said, to help me learn how, you know, and get closer to God. And she said, like, I really need help learning how to pray and things. So we had a really nice talk. But it's, we wanted it to be a church for people like her, because there are so many of them out there who are really drawn toward God, drawn toward Christ. I don't know if you've seen this new book by Dan Kimball. It's called They Like Jesus, But Not the Church. And that sums up so many of the people around us. So that's kind of where we've been. So what we did is we basically had a kind of an Episcopal word and sacrament structure, or ancient word and sacrament structure, and then tried to make it as accessible as we could. And then it just takes the flavor of our own people and, you know, this whatever the group of people is. So it felt a little different yesterday than it did 18 months ago, but that's, you know, it, with the same DNA, but just like, you know, kids grow up and they change and they lose their hair and stuff like that. So, yes?
I struggle with how to ask the question. being in a county seat first church, mm-hmm. or anyone could say in an established church that's yeah. 100 years old,
yeah.
has its written liturgy and its unwritten liturgy.
Yes.
I don't want us to be who we're not.
Yes.
But knowing that I really do connect with what is going on with emergent discussion.
Yes.
Maybe there's some examples you could tell us about established churches trying to implement or begin the conversation in their church to see where it takes them.
Yes.
I don't want to bring a model and set it down yeah. because it's just not going to work.
Yes.
We have two services. Our early service, somebody asked me, what kind of service is it? And are you emergent? And I said, I'm not so sure we could be emergent.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I do want to get the conversation started.
So yeah.
Does that...
Well, sense? I can fool around with that and maybe say something helpful. First of all, you know, here's some of those ironies. This word emerging, church, emergent, which maybe a lot of you know nothing about and others of you know a lot about and others of you wish you didn't know about. But the irony is people who really get it wouldn't ask a question like that. Because they, to use the word, are you an emergent church, sort of assumes that it's another little model, exactly like you're saying. So your discomfort with the question shows to me that you get it, you know. And you know what, maybe that's where I should start. Maybe I should take about 15 minutes and try to spell out my context, what I see going on, and then we can get back to this issue.